And I think that's a challenge, right? I mean, I work with a lot of first-time homebuyers well into their 30s, right? Yeah. Like, I don't think it's a commonplace. I'm 42. I still have friends that have never owned, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's a very real thing. And so I think, yeah, one of those challenges is being that if you're in your 30s and you have a kid or two and now you want to buy a house, buying that townhouse, buying that, you know, one-bedroom condo for $250,000 is no longer something that you feel like you need to do, right? That mm-hmm. that you're above that, you're beyond that, right? And I think these prices, I think our lifestyle, I think the push on social media has pushed people into not owning a home. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to the Living in Denver podcast. And as I'm joined every other week here with the infamous Chris Lawhead, mortgage broker extraordinaire. How you doing this morning, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. So we are in spring, right? And it's happening. Buyers are coming off the fence, and it's always this time of year. We all get flooded with, you know, first-time homebuyers, right? And the questions, and rates haven't dropped like crazy. And so everybody who's kind of hit the pause button for the last couple of years is finally going, maybe they're not going to ever drop. So it's either, you know, time to pull the trigger or not. So I figured we would take the time today and go over a lot of the questions that we get from first-time homebuyers about the lending process. And of course, who better to talk to than Chris. And so I went through, you know, just ranked kind of, you know, the top things that come at me all the time, and they're valid questions. This is a big purchase. This is the biggest purchase you'll ever make in your life. Mm-hmm. Right. And having the right information is where everybody struggles. I think people, and you tell me what you think on this too. I think people are afraid to reach out to a professional, and I'm not exactly sure why. What's your take on that, Chris? How many people have you talked to over the years that you're like, you're going through this blind? Like, what the heck? Like, yeah, why don't people want to reach out to us right off the bat?
They're scared. They're scared of looking dumb. People are scared to ask questions and look foolish. And that is a superpower if you can overcome that. If you can figure out how to acknowledge your ignorance, acknowledge the fact that you don't know stuff and go ask questions, you're going to learn way faster. I mean, I think, you know, the Joe Rogan's an example of this. He's not a genius. He's just a guy who asks questions over and over and over and over. And so you got to be okay with not knowing and asking the questions, and then you got to speak up. If a lender says DSCR and you don't know what that is, you got to say, what's DSCR? And I still do this. This is something I practice. We had a lending representative give a talk to a bunch of lenders the other day, and he rattled off some acronyms that I didn't know, and I had to raise my hand. I'd say, I don't know this. And I know half the people in that room didn't know it, but yeah. I was the only one to appear foolish temporarily, and now I know what it is. So ask the questions, and if you don't understand the answer, ask again and again. And if at the end of the conversation with whoever you're speaking to, if you still don't understand, time to talk to somebody else.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, couldn't agree more. There's actually been I forget his name right now, but he talks about he's a consultant for lots of high companies, and he talks about how to communicate within the team properly. And he sits in on these meetings, and he'll be the one, because he doesn't know the business. Like, you know, he'll go into Amazon and he'll go into Apple and these corporate meetings, right, which are all stuffy, and he doesn't understand half the lingo, of course. And he'll be the one to ask a question because he knows that's his job. And then he'll find out after the meeting that half the people didn't know the answer, but they all were nodding their heads going along because they didn't want to look like the one that didn't know, right?
That's right.
And yeah, if there's one thing you can take out of this above all else is all this information is free. And if you're getting a big sales pitch on you to make a move, you're talking to the wrong person, right?
Yep.
That's it. There's this, houses sell themselves. We're not here to sell you a house. No one should be. We're here to walk you through the process, make sure you get where you want to be. So what do you see, especially in Denver, right? We're a different market than the middle of Ohio or Florida, California. What do you see as some of the most common challenges with first-time home buyers in Denver, whether that's lending or not?
Well, price is probably the biggest one, right? Denver's an expensive place to live. You know this better than I do. The average house in Denver is somewhere around $600,000,
yep.
Right? So price stumbles, makes first time home buyers stumble. Second would be down payment. A lot of new first time home buyers are saddled with student debt, car loans, and they haven't had been in a position to save, you know, the 20% down, right? And then they come to learn, oh, you don't need 20% down. You could do it for 10 or 5 or 3.5 or 1 or 0, right? It goes all the way down to 0. Now, of course, the devil's in the details, but lack of down payment is not a good excuse, right? It's not a good reason to not explore this, right? If you've got a job, if you can show income and you have an established FICO score, you know, generally 600 or above, right? The minimums, depending on the program, is sometimes it's 600, sometimes it's 680, sometimes it's 620, depends on the program. But if you've got as long as your credit score isn't below 600 and you've got a steady gig, you have a chance to get into a house, right? Now, the last thing I'll say is your first house often isn't your dream house, unless you're just a rock star employee or you've started a business or whatever. You know, it's a starter house, so maybe you're buying a condo or a townhome, mm-hmm. right? You're not starting out with your 3,000 square foot dream home on 40 acres with a pond and a stream and deer frolicking through the flowers, right?
Yeah.
You start with something that makes sense and then you go from there.
Right. I think the narrative out there, like, oh, you don't need to own a home and it's not, you know, advantageous and all this stuff. Let me show you why it makes more sense to rent. And I'm gonna piggyback on too, is it Dave Logan, Dave Ramsey, right? The credit guy. No credit is better than credit, which I know that's a whole nother story on whether or not I believe his thesis, which I don't. But the reason why his program is so successful and his debt snowballing is, and he even tells you, he's like, it doesn't make the most sense to pay off the smallest credit card first versus the one with the highest interest. But the reason why we do that is to gain traction. It's the same idea with buying that little crappy one bedroom condo. Buy where you don't want to live, buy what you don't want to buy. And in 5 to 10 years, you now can do what you want, right? You have the freedom. I mean, I had buyers that bought in Brighton 5 years ago, right? They made $200,000 in 5 years. They bought for $200,000. They sold for $400,000 in a handful of years, and it changed their life,
yep.
right? And they bought with 0% down using a VA loan, like going through all this stuff, and it changed their life because of one decision. And the decision was, should we live in Brighton? Turned out to be a phenomenal move for them. So
can I have one more thing?
Yeah, go for it.
One additional thing that I see first-time home buyers where they stumble is the old analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
And trust me, folks, I have a relationship. Me and analysis paralysis, we're homies, right? But you do have to tell that you do have to act. And so one of the scariest things I see first-time home buyers doing is talking about the Federal Reserve and what's the Federal Reserve going to do to interest rates. That and they're playing this macroeconomic game, something that even the great geniuses of our time, you know, are not successful at predicting what the Fed's going to do on a regular basis. And so a first-time home buyer now is playing the what's the Fed going to do game, and that's just going way too deep down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And the end, the result of that is not getting into a house or a townhome or a condo, not buying and owning a property. So beware of analysis paralysis and don't put too much weight into what the Federal Reserve is doing. Mm-hmm. That's my humble opinion. And I've given this lecture plenty of times. So now I'm giving it to you, buddy.
Yeah. You can't time the market, right? We've talked about this numerous times. Everybody's been wrong about every crash. Yep. I mean, for crying out loud, Michael Burry, right, got famous for predicting the last bubble, which he was off by an entire year. The market, he was getting death threats from his investors, all that. And then finally he was right, made a fortune. Well, just a couple months ago, he made his next big prediction and he bought puts in the stock market and it was going to crash and go down. Well, a few months later, he was like, yeah, nope, I'm wrong. He had one of the biggest short positions in the market and he had to exit it all, lost billions of dollars. So for every time he's right, he's wrong 9 other times, right? That's what happens when you're trying to time it and using their information to make your decision for you. It just obviously it doesn't work. No one has many success stories trying to do that. So right. Getting into your first home, biggest question I get, you know, is how much I can afford, right? They're coming to us first as agents, usually, before they go to a lender or a broker. And they just don't know how much they can afford, except they've gone online and they've looked at a calculator and they have kind of a rough idea, but that doesn't calculate in all of your debt and potentially lots of other factors, property taxes, homeowners insurance, which is going up like crazy across the country. So what's your best suggestion for how someone could determine their budget on buying a house?
I mean, I would talk to a lender, a mortgage broker, a banker, whoever you're, you know, I'm of course a broker, so I'm partial to being a broker because we have, you know, 50, 60 lenders in a pipeline. But if you want to talk to a banker, great. You want to talk to a professional and you want them to do the calculation for you. Here's why, right? They will know what they can omit. They will know what they can put a factor on, meaning, hey, I've got $100,000 in student loans and my student loan payment is $1,000 a month. Well, we don't have to count that full payment against you, right? You're not going to learn that. You're not going to be able to do this yourself. So you could say, oh, you know, for conventional loans, the debt to income ratio, meaning all your debts versus all your income, is at 44 or 45%. Okay. That's easy. You could do all that yourself and get out a mortgage calculator and do that. But what you won't know is the factors you can put on student loan debt, or that the fact that you can omit a car loan if it's going to be paid off in the next 10 months. There's all these little details that a professional can help you with. And you would spend hours and hours and hours researching this and not learn it all, okay? And not learn it all yourself. So first and foremost, you talk to a pro and you look at your income and you look at your debt service, and your debt service is student loans, car loans, personal loans, and the mortgage you're going to be paying, plus the principal, the interest, the taxes, and the insurance. And someone like me, or a reputable mortgage lender, right, can look at a neighborhood and go, okay, I've done 20 loans in this neighborhood. I'm going to estimate that, you know, taxes are $400 a month and insurance on a single family home is $180 to $200 a month, and be pretty darn close. My estimates on taxes and insurance these days, without having the property and without getting the quote, is within $50 every time. So long story short, talk to somebody.
So then what say you to the people that don't want to reach out to someone like yourself? Because they don't want their credit pulled. Like, I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want a hit on my credit score. And I don't want it to be hit negatively. Like, okay, why not? Right? Why should they talk to you? Is that a factor?
Simple. Ask whoever you're speaking to not pull your credit initially. Right? Just say,
wait,
I don't want
to. You can find out what they can buy without pulling their credit?
Absolutely. Right. If you're willing to be honest with them. Yeah. Now, if you say, hey, I don't want my credit pulled, and then you give them your income and you don't mention that monster truck that you just financed for $2,000 a month. OK, that's not going to work out for you very well. Yeah. But if you're willing to say, hey, I'm paying this for my car, I'm paying this for my student loans, and I, you know, I've got this job, I make $100,000 a year and it's a W-2 job. What can I get approved for? Right. And a good mortgage broker, a good mortgage lender will look at your stuff and go, okay, you're in this range, right? You're in this range, and here's the assumptions. And of course, the devil's in the details, but, you know, somebody who's been doing it a few years, or at least, you know, let's say at least 10 years, can get pretty darn close without pulling your credit. And it's just a conversation on the phone, as long as you're willing to be honest with them.
Yep. Yep. I know you're preaching to the choir here, my friend. We say this stuff all the time, and I get caught in the position of kind of starting to have your conversations, right? Where it's like, no, this is what you need to do. No, we're not going to go look at homes. This is what you need to do. No, are you sure you want to sell this place? I mean, I just had that client that I sent your way this last week or something that thinks she has to sell her current place to buy what she wants to buy. Are you sure you have to do this, right? Can you not refi a little bit and pull out enough to buy your next place? Like, do you know if you can do that? Well, no, but I'm pretty sure. No, if you don't know, you don't know.
Right.
That's it. You will be amazed at what can be done. Don't ever assume this stuff, because as you always say, you're paying someone's mortgage anyways. You might as well pay your own.
That's right. I can't say that too many times.
Nope.
You're always paying a mortgage. If you're living indoors, right, you're paying either your landlord's mortgage or your own. So yep, why not pay your own?
So different types of mortgages, right? I always get asked about weird stuff I've never heard of. Right, mm-hmm. It happens. Now, the common loan types I have heard of most every type. But as people look for a house, as they start to learn like down payments, oh, you don't have to have 20%. So I think that's probably the number one misconception that I hear out there is, well, I don't have 20%. Who the heck has $125,000 to put down on a $580,000 house? Well, not that many people. Like, not as many as you think. This whole, you know, oh, everything's selling for cash out there is a load of crap. Like, folks, this is the reality, is that 99% of homes, I think I've only sold one home in the last 15 years for cash. That's it. Everything else has had a loan. I like people to have loans. Mm-hmm. Why do I like people to have loans? Well, that person coming in with an FHA loan, putting 3.5% down, that maybe even borrowed it from their family, versus the cash offer that comes in at a couple of percent below asking price, they think their shit don't stink. That person with the FHA loan is just wanting to be into a house. They want to be into your house, and they are going to be ecstatic when it happens if you work with them, where the cash buyer has any option under the sun, virtually. So which one has the more motivation? So this whole cash is king, that's true in only a certain situation, but at the end of the day, when we sell a house, it's all cash. So it doesn't matter how you're buying it. I actually love the motivation of a lot of these loans. But the different loan types, break it down for me from conventional to FHA, VA, USDA, which not many people actually have heard about. What is the difference between these loans? Because I even get a little bit fuzzy on some of the details here.
Okay. I'm going to take a big breath.
Yep.
Here we go. So we start with conventional, right? A conventional is what it sounds. It's just a straightforward loan that generally you can put 5, 10, 15, or 20% down or more and get a conventional loan. What conventional means is it's sold on the secondary market to Fannie or Freddie, okay? Those are government-sponsored agencies, and they essentially have created this 30-year loan market for people in the United States, okay? Most people have heard of conventional loans. Now, we enter a new space here that not everybody's familiar with. On my end, we call them govy loans, government loans. These are government-insured loans, although often the borrower pays for that insurance. But again, these are government-insured loans, and what are they? FHA, VA, USDA, those three, okay? And FHA only requires 3.5% down. A VA loan requires zero. This is one of the true 0% down loans, okay? USDA is also a 0% down loan. Now, of course, with a VA loan, plenty of my borrowers who have gotten VA loans have put down payment, right? You have the option of putting 0, 1, 10, 20, whatever, right? Same with USDA. Now, a USDA loan, for example, obviously a VA loan, you have to be a veteran, right? Or an active service member. You've got to serve in the military or have served. A USDA is a loan for a specific area in the country, right? It has to be zoned USDA. USDA also has income limits. That's where people get caught up with USDA loans. They find this beautiful hobby farm. It's on 40 acres. It's got a river running through it. It's got a pond, and it's only $5 million. and the person who's buying it makes $1 million a year. Well, guess what? They're not going to get a USDA loan. Mm-hmm. That's not who they're for. These govy loans, FHA, VA, USDA, they're not for the super rich guy who's buying his hobby farm. They're for normal people, right? Who might not have the down payment necessary, right? And so a USDA is a great option if you're under the income limits and if that property is located in a USDA zone, right? A rural zone. And so, I've got a map I can show you, yeah, and it's really easy to pull up.
I was going to say, so how far out of Denver, for example, like, can you do a US, like, how far are we talking? Are we talking Sterling or are we talking like parts of Parker?
I've done USDA loans in Brighton.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, you're going east, right?
Yeah.
Generally. But if you look on the map, it's not a clear line. It's a wiggly squiggly. I mean, it's actually a kind of like a squared off line that wiggles and squiggles around,
yeah,
various areas. And those areas are changing as these big developments go in. I mean, listen, some of the USDA land that was available, you know, 20 years ago is now big neighborhoods and obviously not, you know, not in the USDA zoning anymore. But it's great for people who are buying. You can even get an acre. It's not a full farm, right? People hear USDA, they think farmland. We're not talking fully operational 1,000-acre farm here. You could have a half acre in a USDA zone. You could have 40 acres. It's not necessarily a working farm. In fact, I don't know if I've ever done a working farm in USDA, a USDA loan in on a working farm. So that's another myth, okay? The big thing is look on the map. You can Google it or you could call me and I could show you together on the map where you're looking for, where you're looking and what the zone is. And then we look at the income limits for that area, right? It's not just flat income limits across the board, across the country. It's income limits for that area.
Gotcha. So then on these loan types, let's just say someone had 20 grand to put down and that was, you know, at least 5%. So let's forget about down payments for a second. Why would someone choose one loan type over another?
Well, let's say you've got above, so an FHA loan, for example, is 3.5% down. But let's say you've got 5% down. Okay. Well, you could do a conventional loan with 5% down, and or you could do an FHA loan with 5% down. The devil's in the details, right? What if your credit score is 650? I'll tell you this right now. I mean, this is not a hard, solid brick wall rule, but conventional loans generally don't like you when you've got a 650 credit score and your interest rate goes up, right? Mm-hmm. General rule, lower the credit score, higher the interest rate. Well, what if conventional doesn't want to touch you because you're in the low 600s? FHA will like you, right? So you can get an FHA loan, same down payment. That's actually a better, cheaper way to go in terms of your payment, because the FHA program is not punishing you so severely for having a lower credit score like a conventional loan would. Am I articulating that okay?
Yeah, no, I 100%. No, that's perfect to hear because, and the reason why I ask that too is that on the sell side, right, when I'm coaching my sellers, I go about it differently than most agents do, right? Because I actually do like FHA loans. I do like VA loans. Not that my bias has any determining factor on what the seller does, but we all know in reality, our biases have a direct correlation to what the seller thinks.
Yeah.
And I have lots of people say things like, well, it's an FHA loan, so I doubt the seller's going to take it. And now I have to go through an education process with that listing agent representing my buyer and telling them why it's a good, and I feel like the smuckiest, I don't know. I feel like we all need to go through courses on what we're actually talking about, because I mean, the barrier of entry in real estate is extremely low, unfortunately, and we're not taught on all these things. And yes, there are different barriers with FHA than there is a conventional loan. There's a list of requirements from an appraiser that need to be met, you know, to get approved for an FHA loan. But in from your experience, which is the biggest pushback that I hear, and now that we're talking about it, the list of requirements for an FHA loan, is it the same as for a VA loan? Because that's the one thing I hear all the time.
Okay, this is a pet peeve of mine, and this actually drives me bonkers when
I'm poking at you a little bit. I know. Yeah,
when essentially selling agents discriminate against people who have these govy loans, which is illegal.
Yeah.
And it is immoral. And think about what they're doing. Let's take VA for an example. They're discriminating against a veteran buying a house. That's madness. I mean, just saying that out loud makes my blood boil. Listen, everybody. If the house you're selling has the flooring ripped up, right, and it's on fire, and there's a gaping hole to God knows where, you're not going to get a conventional loan on it. It's not going to pass a conventional appraisal. It's not going to pass an FHA appraisal. It's not going to pass a VA appraisal. The idea that these VA and FHA appraisals are insanely strict is just false, right? What are they looking for? Broken windows, right? Yeah. Flooring ripped up. Anything health and safety, right? So if you're selling a decent property that has the carpet where the carpet's supposed to go and the vinyl flooring where the vinyl flooring's supposed to go and the windows aren't broken and it's not on fire, it's going to be pretty easy to pass these appraisals, right?
Yeah.
They're not crazy. Yes, they have checklists.
Yep.
Yes, you have specific VA appraisers, right? Not every appraiser can do a VA appraisal, okay? But the strictness is nothing like what I see so many talk about. And I talk, you know, I always call when one of my agents makes an offer, I call that listing agent and I say, hey, you got my lender letter. Look, it's a VA loan. And they go, well, what about the VA restrictions? And I go, what VA restrictions? And then I just say, are there broken windows? Is the flooring ripped up? Yeah. Is the siding ripped off the side of the house? And guess what? If the siding's ripped off the side of the house, and a conventional loan or a conventional, an appraiser goes out for a conventional loan, you're going to get dinged there. They're not going to close if the siding's ripped off. So if they've prepared their house appropriately for sale, then it's not an issue.
Yeah, it is a little embarrassing when you get that pushback or the lack of understanding. And it's hard when we're in a multiple offer scenario, you know, everybody kind of automatically goes to cash, conventional, FHA, VA. And I'm like, yeah, like as far as, so if everybody was offering the same dollar amount, what would people take? And logically, most people would take the cash offer, right? But unless there's an inspection waiver, right? It doesn't matter. Like you should be priced appropriately where you believe it will appraise. So if you don't think it will appraise, or you don't think you think there's enough inspection issues where that cash offer waives them, that's the only benefit in my opinion. Other than that, even conventional versus the FHA or VA, like I like all three of those options because more people have more buy-in, right? They're wanting a home, not just a home, you know? And so, no, I don't think I've had many issues with FHA or VA over the years. FHA has less VA has less requirements than FHA does, from my understanding. But on the last loan I did, or the last house I sold on conventional, yeah, they wanted to see pictures of the updated smoke detectors and CO2 detector, you know? And you're like, okay, you just jump through that hoop and go. I've never had that on any other conventional loan. So you never know what you're going to run into, but being educated about this stuff. And to be honest with you, if you're out there looking for a house and you have a buyer's agent and you are working with FHA or VA, it's important for that buyer's agent to let the listing agent probably get educated on those loan types.
And you hope that you're working with a lending partner that can calmly articulate these to the selling agent. Listen, I just sold one of my fourplexes and I was using our buddy Carl to sell it for me.
Yeah.
And the buyer's agent said, hey, I know this is a long shot, but would you even consider an FHA loan? And I said, it's not a long shot whatsoever. Yeah. I know the asset. I know that it's safe. I know it has smoke, CO2, windows that aren't broken, and the flooring's where it's at, and there's no gaping holes in the drywall.
Yeah.
There's not going to be an issue. In fact, I'm sitting here thinking, I cannot remember ever in the last decade getting a loan denied because of some FHA or VA appraisal issue.
Yeah.
But I can remember, and these loans weren't denied, But I can remember two times with conventional loans that the appraiser took a picture of the outside of the house and there was missing siding. And the appraiser said, this is subject to that siding being replaced because you can't have missing siding. And it's funny because one of those times the agents went bonkers and they thought it was the worst thing that had ever happened to them, that they had to put this siding on this house in order for the loan to get approved.
Yeah.
And then the other time was with a reasonable buying and selling agent and they go, okay, we'll have that fixed by Monday. And then they got it fixed and then we closed it. Yeah. So again, I'll just repeat that. I cannot remember in a decade an FHA or VA loan getting denied or there being an issue with an appraisal. And I can remember twice it was an issue with the siding with conventional loans.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep. Completely. So next on our list here is first-time homebuyer programs, right? Yep. These get advertised out there all the time ad nauseum. And, you know, I have my thoughts on them. But I think it probably became popular, 20 years ago or so. I remember there's first-time homebuyer programs. We got like $4,000 or $5,000. That's when they also were running like cash for clunkers, I think. I forget who was in office. Was it Clinton or Obama? They were giving you $4,000 or $5,000 for an old car. And I think that was around the first time you got a first-time homebuyer grant. Everybody, if this is your first time, and I don't know how they even verified that. They gave you $5,000. But I think since then, it's been popular to advertise first-time homebuyer programs. And I know there are legitimate ones. CHAFA is probably the one that comes to mind. But your thoughts, are there any first-time homebuyer assistant programs in Colorado to help first-time homebuyers?
Yes, there's many.
Okay.
So that's the good news. Let's break them down. Obviously, you hear me say this all the time. The devil's in the details. Now, when you're getting these assistance programs, you're going to pay for it in one way or the other, okay? And one of the main ways people pay for these programs is all the hoops you've got to jump through. You just don't go into the down payment assistant office and go, I want to buy this $500,000 house. I need an extra $50,000. They go, okay. You may stroke the check. It doesn't work that way. So there's hoops to jump through. Let's talk about a few. You mentioned CHAFA, right? Yep. The top three, CHAFA, CHAC, and Chenoa. Okay. So let's talk CHAFA. There's two options with CHAFA. There's either a grant of 3% that you don't have to pay back. Okay. Or there's a second mortgage up to 4% that the payments are deferred until certain things are triggered, okay? So we're looking at a 3% or a 4% down payment assistance. Okay. That sounds pretty nice, right?
Yeah.
Remember that these are Govy deals. These are Govy loans. So with Govy loans, there's going to be some mortgage insurance. There's going to be some fees. I think that there's 0% down to get those, okay? To either get the 4% down second mortgage or the 3% down. On CHAC, similar down payment assistance, but it's $1,000 down. So it actually requires the buyer to put some scratch in the game, to bring $1,000 out of their pocket. All of these have minimum credit scores, some at 600, some at 620, generally in the low 600s. The thing I like about these is they are needs-based, okay? You have to prove needs. These are not for investors, okay? These are all owner-occupied loans, okay? And like Chenoa, for example, is specifically aimed at communities that historically haven't had good access to housing or buying housing, right? And so those are, again, minimum 600. The thing about Chenoa, I'll say this. It always has money. Hmm. It always has money. Now, out of these three, there's another one that we don't talk about very often. It's the various county programs. Here's the issue with the county programs and why I think Chenoa always having money is a big deal. These county programs run out of money, and they run out of money fast. So they say, hey, for this year, we've got X amount of millions of dollars to do down payment assistance. And then 3 weeks later, all those millions of dollars have already been allocated and the county option is off the table. So if you're going, you know, let's take Boulder County, for example, you got to go hard in the paint to get those. Now it's legit. It exists, but you got to get on it. You got to be calling. You got to be jumping through the hoops right when they tell you to jump through those hoops, because those funds are not infinite. Chenoa, for example, does, I don't want to say infinite funds, but it's in my experience, they've never run out of money. In my experience, these county options have. So I know I'm all over the place, but we've got Chaffa with the two options, right? Down payment, second mortgage, or a grant. We've got CHAC, which is $1,000 down. We've got Chenoa, which has down payment or loan options. And then you've got your county options. So there's a lot of options.
Yeah.
How are you going to navigate all this? You've got to call a pro. You are not going to navigate all this on your own. You're not going to go to YouTube University and learn all this. And I love YouTube University. Love it. You got to call someone who's been through this.
No, I think I've seen several people go through lengthy processes to get these programs, and then they base their buying off of this program, right? They've got 10 more grand, 15 more grand that they're being gifted or granted, whatever. And then their purchase is based off of that. And then they realize they can't buy what they want, where they want, with this program because of the restrictions. And they've gone through classes, they've gone through courses, they've jumped through hoops, but they went through that first and then opted on how to buy their place versus going to a professional first and going, whoa, 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 like you got on the right path, but maybe that's the wrong program, right?
Right.
We could jump through the same hoops, but at the end of the day, you want to be in this area. So this is the best course to go if you do need down payment assistance. And then on that course for down payment assistance, because that always seems to be where most people struggle the biggest, right? Things like gifts from family members. I have a lot of young people that their boomer parents are pitching in, helping out because they bought for 50 grand on the beach in California as a librarian, and now it's worth $5 million. And so they can help out a little bit. Things like gifts, co-signers, stuff like that. How does that factor in? Good things, bad things? Like, do you have to prove all this stuff? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, great question. So let's take one thing at a time. Let's take gift funds. You can get a gift from mom, dad, brother, sister, aunt, uncle for any of these loans, okay? For FHA, for VA, for USDA, for conventional. Now, not all of the down payment assistance programs allow gift funds, but Chenoa, for example, you can get some of their down payment assistance and some gift from funds from mom or dad. Okay. So again, the devil's in the details. What you can't do is get a loan from mom and dad and they do a promissory note and you're borrowing the down payment. So when you get a gift from mom and dad, they actually sign a gift letter. And part of that mortgage file is a gift letter saying that this is a gift, that this isn't, you know, this gift doesn't come with an interest rate or a repayment or an amortization schedule. This is a gift, okay? When you can borrow down payment, it obviously has to be disclosed. It's in the form of a second mortgage. They have to do what's called a CLTV, a combined loan to value analysis, right? Often you buy with a loan to value, so, you're putting 20% down, your loan to value is 80%. But if you put $10,000 down and borrowed the other $10,000, right, and say $100,000 purchase, now your CLTV is 90, okay? So you must disclose these things. Disclose, disclose, disclose. You never want to play the game of, wink, wink, I'm not going to tell this lender, you know, mom and dad are lending me this $100,000. We're just going to pretend it's a gift. You don't want to poke that bear. You don't want to play with mortgage fraud. So, long story short, gift funds, yes, across the board. Sometimes you can borrow that down payment if it's disclosed and approved.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you again, Chris. Appreciate it. Hopefully this has been some huge help to people out there that, you know, don't know where to start. And I think going back to the moral of the story, you start with one of us. right? As simple as that sounds, we're not here to sell you anything. Trust me, we're here to help you get to where you want to be. And maybe that's in 5 years from now. Who knows? But this information is out there. It's free. Just make sure you're going to a trusted source, trusted advisor, whoever that is. And Chris's information, again, is below in the description. If you need anything, feel free to reach out. And until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, in the Living in Denver podcast, happy housing.